This episode of Film Sack brought to you by Casper.com, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/FilmSack and enter the code FilmSack.
Alcatraz is not like any other prison in the United States. Here, every inmate is confined alone to an individual cell. Unlike my predecessors, Wardens Johnson and Blackwell, I don't have good conduct programs. I do not have inmate councils. Inmates here have no say in what they do. They do as they're told. You're not permitted to have newspapers or magazines carrying news. Knowledge of the outside world is what we tell you.
Your painting privileges have been removed. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
This is Film Sack. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 247. I'm Scott Johnson, joined by Brian. How'd they get that mouse to pose on that guy's crotch, Dunaway?
Easy. Oh, hi. Not since John dies at the end has a title of a movie so succinctly spoiled the tension of a story for me. Every time I felt a little worried about one of them fancy French paper art heads getting touched by a guard and blowing the whole plan, I need only pause the movie on Netflix and go, oh, yeah. Escape from Alcatraz. Also, no Snake Plissken. What kind of prequel is this? Disappointed.
Well done. Also with us, Randy. Hi, and welcome to Nude Prison, Jordan.
Wow. Aloha, Scott. Brian. This week's film reminded me a lot of the years I spent working as a prison guard in a facility where the walls were made out of clay and the prisoners regularly sparked up chemical fires in their cells. Of course, there are some prime requisites we look for in a good prison guard, and if you want to land that sweet job for yourself, I've got them for you here. Number one, be skinny. The prisoners are going to be skinny because we don't feed them much, and they give a part of their food to their contraband pets, but you as a guard have to somehow be skinnier. Two, be completely distracted at all times. What's that noise? What's that smell? You don't care. Good. Actually, it's just the two rules. You're going to do great. Now put on your tap dance shoes and start walking that corridor. Slowly. No, slower.
Oh, that's it. What happened to number three? There's only two?
Two. He ended with the two. There's only two. He always does that.
It's the law of threes, man. Yeah. I expected a Bowser only goes down after I hit him in the head three times. finally, with us, Brian, you look like D-Block Ibbot.
Oh, I do, don't I? Hey, Larry, how's it going? You going to finish your pasta? Oh, man, I had to work in the wood shop today. That was worse than when I was a thimble maker in the Finger Lakes. Man, they really put the thumb screws to you. Oh, hey, can I borrow your fingerless gloves? I'll have them back to you tomorrow. Pinky swear.
Oh, man, the cutoff hand is central to this thing, man. I don't remember this. I saw this movie, and I don't remember that finger bit.
No, all. I didn't either until
that was crazy.
Until it happened.
I'd never seen this before, and I don't want to again.
It's, I mean, I don't know. Like, Ebert at the time in 1979 called it a instant classic, a rugged look at the inside of what might be prison life. And I thought, maybe in 79 it did, I suppose. Now it feels weird, slightly too quiet all the time, and I don't know. It doesn't strike me as a gritty prison drama. Maybe the cameras are all too still. They're not moving around too much.
Maybe. Yeah. It just, it also doesn't feel, it feels a little bit more comfortable than than Orange is the New Black.
Sure.
Well, right, sure. Right? Like times have definitely changed, but whoever decided to put the horror movie screeching into certain parts of this film, they didn't have their head on straight.
Those are great. Oh, yeah. I can't wait to play some of that. I got some of that.
Oh, great.
But the movie is Escape from Alcatraz, and we have a guy with us in spirit anyway, who has the skinny. It's Scott Fletcher. Take it away.
Escape from Alcatraz. Lifer Frank Morris plans his unauthorized departure from Alcatraz in this thriller based on the penitentiary's only successful jailbreak.
Okay.
He's on full-on Zap Brannigan mode, isn't he?
Yeah, I just have to get this out of my system. Alcatraz.
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 But didn't you think, though, that the gritty prison life was pretty well laid out by the terrible warden man? It seemed like he had indicated it would be terrible, and then, you know, it said things like, we don't have good behavior things, and working is this crazy rare thing, and it's only a privilege when you get it. But then suddenly guards are like, yeah, this one pays, and it's not so bad. There's like nice wood stuff. You can make things, and we'll give you a hatchet for hell's sake, you bunch of hardened criminals.
Right. All you have to do is ask, and we'll give it to you.
Yeah.
It's hard to reverse time while you're watching this movie and let go of all the things you've seen since then. Yeah. It's hard. They have a woodworking shop?
Yeah.
No way. Like you just have to, you almost need the privilege of stopping the movie for a moment and scrubbing your brain a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. Because otherwise you're just looking around like there's a bandsaw. Why did they get
right? Well, right. I feel like the woodworking shop and all the art stuff played in directly to the reason why they could have possibly made these fantastic papier-mâché looking heads and all the crafts and stuff they did.
Yeah,
if they had to work, if they had to work this hard in real life, then they would have never went to prison.
Right? Truly, truly, reformation is happening in the walls of that prison.
Amazing.
Yeah, I don't know. I walked away thinking, things are just a little too quiet and casual and separated from the rest of the world. And I don't know why I felt that way. Oftentimes, that's the point of a prison movie. But right. But in Shawshank, we had a more evil warden who was corrupt, and we had evil, corrupt guards. In fact, I'd say the guards in this were kind of straight-laced and doing their jobs. There wasn't a lot of corruption.
So all prison movies remind you of all other prison movies. Was Shawshank the big one for everybody?
Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, at least for us, right? Like, I don't know. There's probably something prior to this that would have done that for people, but I don't know. This one, maybe this was the movie, actually, that did this for my parents. I don't know. But for me, Shawshank is the preeminent one, and I can't think of anything else. Like, what else is significant that isn't stupid, like Tango and Cash or something?
Right.
I thought
Bad
about
Boys.
Yeah, maybe.
I thought about The Rock a tiny bit.
I love The Rock. I love The Rock, but for the wrong. But see, that's different. That's not a prison movie. That's them taking over an ancient, now you know,
defunct, abandoned prison.
Yeah, it's a tourist destination, and that's what
You could say So I Married an Ex-Murder for the same reason.
Yeah, oh, that's right. They do some Alcatraz-y things.
It's Phil Hartman is the tour guide. But you can call me Vicky.
That movie's
great. So I love, so let's just put this out early. I'm a huge fan of the lore, mystique, and whatever exists surrounding Alcatraz as a place. Both historically and currently. And when I was in San Francisco last, made a point of going there again and put on the headsets and paid for the little audio tour because I love that. I just love it. Little head, the guy in my head going, this is where the Birdman of Alcatraz lived. Yeah. He would rub his penis fortnightly, that sort of thing. And I love that.
Been to San Francisco maybe a dozen times, right? For either work or vacation or passing through on our way, you know, from Seattle down to LA on one trip. And I have never done the Alcatraz thing, never gone and did the tour there. And I really want to every time.
You'd love it, dude.
I've wanted to. Yeah.
We went over there on a cold, rainy, windy day.
Oh, so a typical San Francisco day.
Kinda, okay. Yeah, except it was the middle of summer. It was supposed to be nice, and it wasn't. So some people were frustrated, but I was like, no. This is all part of the vibe here, man.
Mm-hmm. You want to set the mood.
Yeah, you don't want to go in. It's all clean and whatever. You know, I don't want to be able to actually see Nicolas Cage eat a green ball of death and like wave down jets. You know.
Right.
Anyway,
birds chirping and
I didn't hate this movie though. I'm surprised that I didn't dislike it. I kind of thought that I didn't like it when I saw it when I was younger, and I thought I would not like it even more because stuff doesn't hold up. And there's definitely problems for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I kind of got into it. I don't know if it's Clint Eastwood or something. Something worked for me there.
It definitely, you know, because of the time it was done and the fact that it is a prison movie that, you know, it all takes place in this one prison, it kind of separates itself from the time stream. You know, it's not like they're going to pull out a cell phone and start using it. It's not like they're, you know, they've got access to the internet or things like that. You know, it's different from what prison life would be like today, but it's not so far removed from prison life that you can't connect to it, can't associate with it.
Sure.
At the same time, it has not aged well. I'm sure that people saw this 35 years ago and were like, "Whoa, look at prison." And I was watching this the whole time going, "Really? That's what they think prison looked like?" Like, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. What'd you say, Dunaway?
And this was back when Clint Eastwood could still say the N-word in a movie.
Yeah.
Right.
So totally different time.
Oh, didn't he say that in Gran Torino? I can't remember.
I think he did. I don't think he said that word, but he said other words.
He said other words, yeah.
We allow him a lot of leeway when it comes to that kind of stuff for some reason.
I think it's because he has transcended all of the awkward film times where we changed our minds about what we thought was okay to say a lot of.
So you should put a trope alert on that, Scott.
Oh, don't we do that right now?
It's called N-word privileges.
Yeah.
And it shows up in movies like Blazing Saddles, like Rush Hour. Quentin Tarantino can't help himself. He thinks he's got N-word privileges forever.
Yeah.
And this movie actually kind of shocked me. Like the whole thing where he and the black guy call each other boy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That was,
You have to kind of, pull yourself backwards 35 years in time to understand that that's even meaningful.
Well, it was set in 1960, right?
Yeah.
I want to say. And would that have still been enough time to pretend you were Al Capone, or was the best thing
in the movie?
So the guy who played Kramer on the fake Kramer on Seinfeld, he seemed to buy right into it. And I thought, wait, when did he die? I don't know when he died. I guess maybe he was still around in 1960. I don't know.
Yeah, he was.
Pasta poisoning.
Yeah.
Right. Was he also Mr. Heckles on Friends.
Oh, what? Oh, that guy you mean.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about Larry Hankin.
Larry Hankin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Charlie Butts.
Yeah, Charlie.
That's right. He was also the guy who owned the junkyard in Breaking Bad smushed the RV.
Oh, Old Joe was his name in that.
Old Joe. Very good. Yep.
Yeah, I remember that now. Now I've lost the link to the movie, but he's an interesting dude in lots of things. He was an alien, the first alien.
Oh, really?
Perished early. Yeah, died. He was the one who smoked a cigar or a cigarette. I can't remember which, a lot, and had a big nose. And
I don't even remember him in Alien.
Yeah, he was great in that. What's his name again? Give me his name.
Larry Hankin
was in.
Oh, he's the homeless detective TV movie. I didn't even know they made TV movies anymore. I got to see that.
Maybe I have him mixed up. Let me make sure I don't have that mixed up. I thought, you know who I'm thinking of?
You're thinking of Harry Dean Stanton.
Yes, that's who I'm thinking
Harry
of.
Harry Dean Stanton. Okay.
Yep. They are interchangeable.
Yeah.
The nose, I can see that.
I always do this. In fact, I remember when Seinfeld aired and they were doing that fake show of the show. And I remember going, "What? I can't believe Harry Dean Stanton's on Seinfeld." I did the same thing then.
Nice. The you know what, though? It's easy mistake to make, because while Harry Dean Stanton was making Alien, Larry Hankin was appearing as an electrician in the layoff episode of Benson.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yes. Remember that one.
See,
yeah.
There you go. Is it Larry Hankin? Okay. There he is.
Larry Hankin.
All right.
You know how on IMDb they'll do a user have list, and they'll put all their actors in certain lists and everything? Mm-hmm, yeah. There's one that Mr. Hankin is a part of is called Ugly Actors and Actresses. First I was like, oh, that's pretty offensive. And then it's a list of 265 people. That is a lot of ugly.
Wow. This person must be amazingly gorgeous, the person who put this list together.
Yeah.
Number two, Paris Hilton.
Okay.
What?
Really?
Right.
I mean, I'm not a giant Paris Hilton fan, but she's not ugly.
DJ Qualls. So, Ashley Olsen.
Crooked
faces.
Who are popular and offensive to this person.
Okay, yeah, basically.
Because it's got the Olsen twins in the top 10. That's meaningless.
Right. So why isn't it just a list of 10 different spellings of Steve Buscemi's last name? Because
Buscemi doesn't even make the top 12. It's really
what? Sad. What?
Yeah.
Well, then this person must like Steve Buscemi.
I posted the link in the Skype.
So, for me, this guy is Mr. Heckles, and I see now what you mean. Like, I didn't realize that he wasn't Harry Dean Stanton.
Really? Oh man, I think they're so. I mean, they both have that kind of like beaten down, ruddy kind of every man, slack jawed, but like they're
yokels kind of. They're tall. They're usually a little bit dumb. like their characters. Yeah, to me they're interchangeable. I don't know why. I don't know why it's so hard for me to remember
Harry
which one was.
Stanton seems so much shorter to me than Larry Hankin. Hankin is very tall. By the way, also Clint Eastwood, tall.
Yeah. Is he?
He was in this movie he was anyway, because he kept really hitting his head on the when he came in, when they marched him down the green mile of nakedness.
Yeah.
Down the middle. I mean, he was impressive. You know what I mean?
I didn't realize that he was, I know this happens in movies for me all the time. I'll see a guy who I think is just towering, and then you see him in real life standing next to a shorty and they're like the same height. And you're like, what the hell was that? Like I always have this picture in my head that Chris Pine is enormous. He's not. Right. He's just like a little Tom Cruise guy.
He's average dude. Guy. Clint Eastwood, 6'4".
You mentioned, by the way, that he was in that episode where they were calling in people to play the parts of Kramer on Seinfeld.
Yeah.
He actually really auditioned for the role of Kramer, and Larry David wanted him instead of Anderson. What was the guy's name?
Are you me today? Have you switched? Or was this? I know. This Freaky
all of a
Friday?
Sudden, I can't think of.
I can't think of it now either. Who played Kramer? It was Richardson.
Michael Richards.
Michael Richards.
Thank you. Yes. There you go. Holy mackerel! Brain fart. Jeez.
That was a big fart. Okay. I want to give this movie one big piece of credit. And that is, I still think, all these years later and even today, it is one of my favorite movie posters ever made.
Mm-hmm. It's a great movie poster.
I love the art. It's a painting, first of all. It's extremely well done. It would hold up today. It would look great today. Maybe the font would need to change. But that look is really cool.
Eastwood coming through the cracks.
Yeah, coming through the granite. Yeah, I think that's just badass looking.
With the exception of the little shot of Alcatraz on the concrete.
The reflection there,
The reflection. They don't need that.
I think that makes it even better because you don't see it at first. You don't realize that it's not just scratches in the rock.
It looks a little like it's stink lines.
I'm so angry. Like stinky lines.
Stinky halo lines above him there.
Right.
The font is a terrible choice. Pac-Man called. They want their font back. Yeah. I just think that is a really cool poster. And if I was going to do like retro, like a movie home theater kind of thing where you put like retro movie posters everywhere, I would fight to get this one in there. I think it's really neat and has a classic
thing.
Oh, we
have gone for years. We've never talked about this. What are your greatest movie posters that you want in your home theater?
Jaws would be good. Mm-hmm.
Gotta have the Jaws. Gotta have the Star Wars.
Star Wars, Jaws, probably Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark would be good.
Right.
Have those.
You're going too fast.
Empire Strikes Back.
I'm trying to keep up. There was something in there that I didn't agree with.
There's all the standard ones. Empire Strikes Back would look great. Like all the Star Wars.
Aside from being movies that you really enjoy.
And that's the first and foremost the point, right?
Yeah,
you should put up posters of movies that you love.
Right. But I see what you're saying. Like, all right, what are some really iconic, or not iconic, but just like striking movie posters?
Well, here's a list. The internet has come to.
Oh, there's tons of them. What movie poster is that first one that you put up?
I think Jaws. That question for me is the first one I put up. Yeah, and then
sorry everybody, we had a glitch. We're back. All right, Dunaway, you were saying your Jaws was a big deal. What else?
Oh yeah, Jaws is a big deal. Definitely have to have Star Wars. And one of my favorite posters of all time has to be Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
That I stared at that poster. For just, I don't know, way too long.
Yeah.
Well, it's cool. I mean, it looks like, obviously, it's supposed to look like a pulp
magazine
cover. It looks like a comic book cover to me, right? With the, the character, the actors on the side. Die Hard, I really like. The one with the towers and then half of Bruce Willis's face. Mm-hmm. And the National Lampoon's Vacation poster that is the painted one with
what's his name?
Chevy Chase.
The knockoff.
Who's the artist?
Hildebrandt?
No. It's the other guy that does sexy fantasy all the time. What was his name?
Horace Vallejo?
Vallejo. That's a Vallejo, man.
Is it really?
Yeah. I think so.
So you're going to have Star Wars and this right next to each other? Isn't that the...
I have the two, sure.
In my first real apartment when I was in college, the first place I really was, I was all on my own for it, and I had a roommate. We put up the three original Star Wars posters. And even back then, they were expensive. It was hard to track them down. And get the right ones, you know, because people were constantly coming out with new Star Wars posters. Mm-hmm. And I still have those three. I took them out of the frames and carefully packaged them up. And I have them in my garage. And I always wonder if I'd ever put them up again.
And it's going to get sent to some recycling center and they're going to sell it
for $200,000. Remember that?
The one poster from a movie I love that I think I'd put up first would be Amadeus.
Oh, yeah, it's a good one. With that big head, that big crazy face thing.
Just amazing. And the poster that I love from a movie that I've not seen a lot, but I guess I can understand people loving it, is Apocalypse Now.
It's very poster. Simple. Big red and just very stark in contrast.
Weird painting.
I had for a while, my spouse worked at a movie theater, and as a result, we used to get all the big vinyl ones.
The ones you can put a light behind, right? Because they're semi-transparent. Yeah.
And they're huge, too. These were just giant. And I loved that so much. And we would go upstairs where the projector rooms were, and they would take all the posters they didn't give away. They just had piles and piles of, and I would just go through them. Mm-hmm. And I actually, the one that I got that was, I don't know why I picked it up, and I kept it forever, and it was huge on my wall. It was, is it Kangaroo Jack?
Oh, really?
Remember that one?
Yeah. That's a terrible movie.
I never even saw the movie, but for some reason, the brightness of the poster was just a lot of fun.
That movie's garbage, man. It's really, really bad, but cool poster. I'll give you that. There's probably plenty of others, but I don't know. For whatever reason, Silence of the Lambs is really good. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Now you're getting me. Ugh, I want to do it. There's actually places you can just go buy these, just reprints.
Oh, sure.
And
remember Suncoast?
Oh, yeah. Dude, Suncoast, an entire store dedicated to this kind of crap.
Right.
Are they gone? They're gone.
Oh, they're way gone, right? Yeah. Unless there's some kind of weird holdout somewhere that's like, we're never going. We got Laserdisc. We got posters.
Well, they got bought out by some weird thing. Hot Topic owns them now or something. Who knows? directed by Don Siegel. He is also known as Donald Siegel and ends up working quite a bit during the career of Clint Eastwood, although they got estranged later in his life and they didn't do much after a certain point. That guy died sort of recently-ish. Anyway.
And how many Don Siegel movies have we seen now? I know Dirty Harry.
Dirty Harry.
Which
crap.
Is prior to this shortly.
I was just thinking of that. Hold on.
Oh, Body Snatchers? Invasion? That was the 56 version.
It was a different one. Yeah, saw that, the remake.
Hold on here. Okay, here we go. No, we didn't do that one. Convoy. Yeah. There it is, Convoy. Oh, no, wait. Convoy's a TV series. He did the TV series, not the movie.
Oh, okay. All right.
Nope, that's it. I think that's all we've done. Mm-hmm. So we should... he's big on TV. Did a bunch of stuff in the early 50s, late 40s when he got started. Jeez. And he died 1991 at the age of 78. 78, everybody. Oh. 78.
78. What a weird time to die.
This has Clint Eastwood, Patrick McGoohan.
Patrick McGoo.
Or McGoohan, if you want to say it that way. Roberts Blossom. That's a great name. Mm-hmm.
He was Jack.
Fred Ward is in here, which is great. Young Fred Ward.
Not enough Fred Ward.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. Why not, though? I wonder. What was the deal there, do you suppose? Right. It's kind of sad. I think
he was just so young then. I mean, he was nobody probably at this point.
Do you guys remember the 2003 episode of Mythbusters where they tried to reproduce this exact escape based on whatever historical data they could find? And
no, but after watching this, I found that out.
Yeah, and they did it, or proved it plausible at the very least, quite likely possible. They got out. They made it using everything that we know they may have used. The only things they couldn't do is, reproduce stuff like, did the heads.
Heads?
Yeah, that stuff was a known quantity by the guards and things once they figured out that those were fake. But, this is a good point to bring this up. This freaked me out. I'm watching the movie and I went, oh, yeah, those fake heads. Why did they get so detailed? You just needed the back of the head, some of the hair, a tiny bit of the face showing or whatever, because that's all they were ever going to see. Why are you in this movie getting all detailed with lips and teeth and eyeliner and all this stuff?
Smiles.
They're never going to see those faces, because if they ever got to the point where they saw that stuff, the gig is up.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Long before then. So I guess I thought, Hollywood, another Hollywood. And then I went and looked down this deep rabbit hole about the actual guys who escape. And there's a picture of the head, and it's as detailed as the movie.
Yeah, it's creepy, right, too. Right.
Yeah, I don't like it.
It's really disturbing.
You know what I would have done? I would have slowly have built the papier-mâché head over my own and kind of went out into the yard and everything, and slowly I would start transforming into that papier-mâché head. And then it would never strike them weird once it actually happened.
Just basically have your coat pulled up over your shoulders and have the... Have the head sticking out of the top.
So my reality-based thinking after this movie was on the actual escape itself, because we're always told that it was just practically impossible to escape. And so I made my usual list of what are the pros and cons on the escape itself. Once you're getting off the island, what's working for you and against you. And
so one of the pros would be I've gotten out of prison.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And like everybody always comes up with that short list of the problems, the reasons why the Mythbusters, could only call it plausible, because you got to be a really good swimmer. You got to deal with cold currents and sharks.
Yeah.
And those are, those are pretty strong deterrents to someone completing this thing. But then when I started looking on the other column, oh my gosh, there's clubs of people who swim San Francisco Bay all the time. There's a triathlon actually called the Escape from Alcatraz Triathlon. You swim right off Alcatraz and over to the across the bay. There's a group that swims 100 miles in and around San Francisco Bay. Like 100-mile swim is tremendous amount of swimming.
That's insane.
But a prisoner actually being able to do this, like they made sure in this movie to show the prisoners like working out, staying in shape, this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And of course, Clint, it explains why Clint Eastwood looks so muscular. Like they had to show that.
Right.
But that's lifting weights. That's push-ups and sit-ups and squats. That's not swimming.
Yeah.
Right.
That's not endurance training.
Yeah, they had a wood shop, but I don't think they had a swimming pool at this.
Yeah, they definitely didn't.
No.
It does seem like, why do we have the workout benches and the weights and stuff in prisons? I mean, aren't we basically saying, hey, let's make you stronger so you can overpower more guards?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Basically.
So do you think it was really more of a mind game? Because that's the first thing the warden does is kind of psych you out. I mean, did they realize that it wasn't as secure as they thought? Do you think the warden realized it?
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, there are other attempts, but they're the only ones that ever pulled it off. And then 6 months later, the prison shut down. So
right, they shut it down.
Yeah. So I my thinking is, was that part of their decision because they lost these three inmates and now we don't know how insecure the place is and it's so old and crumbling that. Mm-hmm. To beef that up would cost way too much tax dollars, blah, blah, blah. Or do they shut it down for other reasons? I don't know.
Right.
I don't know if that was the impetus for that. But the problem is they never found these guys. So they may have drowned and bodies became elusive. I don't know. They may have never made it.
Eaten by sharks, completely or something.
Or they may have still be alive and well in Canada.
It could be. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Well, let's see. I was going to look up that guy again. What was his name? Not Clint Howard.
Frank Miller?
No.
Not Frank Miller. I know that guy, Frank Morris.
I figured they'd be 80 to 85.
Yeah. Oh, Frank Morris, that's it. All right.
So do you think, would you suddenly show back up if you were able to? I mean, like, okay, you find out you got 6 months to live. Do you show back up and go, psych, here I am?
He was born, by the way, I'll answer that in a second.
I might.
Born in 26. So that's he was born in 1926. I don't know for sure if he'd be dead by now, but that's pretty old if he isn't.
Interviews you would get.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Right. Oh, you'd be on the Today Show. The View would want to talk to you.
Don't you think that would have, but that's my whole point. Don't you think that something would have shown up somewhere? Like this always goes this way. If somebody truly escapes from something, they always end up showing up somewhere going, oh, I'm on my deathbed. Now I want to tell everybody the truth. Or I want to, how many of them actually go, I lived my whole life in Canada. Nobody was the wiser. I'm out. I don't know if that happens. Or am I just wishful thinking? Yeah. I think these guys died. I hate to say it.
I think they're shark food.
Yeah.
Poop.
It's pretty likely. Like even with the Mythbusters thing, I come away thinking probably 80% chance they didn't make it.
Yeah. And the Mythbusters thing was they could only call it plausible because there were a lot of other factors like weather, getting eaten by sharks aren't going to happen to Adam and Jamie because there's a crew floating along with them.
Right.
Well, right. And it's a totally different landscape now. At night, you would swim toward the closest light that you could see.
Yeah.
And there's like 1,000 times more lights than there used to be. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even in 1960. Anyway, I think that place is cool and I want to go back and visit it.
Do prisons still employ the use of spotlights instead of just having a bunch of lights?
God, what a trope.
I mean, the manual spotlights, right?
Right. Because it's like pitch black.
Yeah.
You mean except for the Batman?
Sorry,
spotlight.
I mean to rub you over. But,
apparently, someone operating a spotlight can only see things that are perfectly within the borders of the spot itself, which makes no sense when we or the viewers are seeing them clearly and they're not in the spotlight.
Right.
I don't understand how this bizarre physics works.
Yeah, it's always
but
been
then,
that way.
Also, apparently, the person moving the spotlight always moves it in this perfectly predictable pattern and pacing, so that. that it never jigs or jags or anything like that.
Time to like duck out of the way real quick.
Yeah. It's like playing Metal Gear Solid. You know exactly what shadow to stay in. You've died three times, so you know that other spotlight's going to hang there for a second, then go to the left. Like, you know, that's... I think that sometimes these tropes persist because we don't have any other way. We've never really seen it work in real life. Like, none of us have been in prison. We don't know how their spotlights work at night or if they even employ them. For all I know, just lights are on all the time out there. I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't think they would do that today. I think it would just be more economical just to put a bunch of lights up.
Yeah, have a bunch of bright, I don't know if they can do LEDs, but, you know, something outside that's like a stadium lighting or something.
Right.
That's just on. So your entire grounds are well lit the entire time. Why would you ever?
And boy, the cameras, the technology of cameras totally just wipe this out.
Right. I think the first time I ever saw this was like Hogan's Heroes, while, you know, Hogan's sneaking around to get a new phone in the coffee pot or whatever. And that's makes sense. It's a comedy, whatever. I just think sometimes Hollywood gloms onto that stuff and says, nope, we're never going to be any different. Every prison movie forever will have this. They'll have old-timey spotlights.
Good Lex day. Luthor and Superman.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
One of my favorites.
Yeah.
That trope got me.
It really got you
the spotlight.
It got you early.
Right. My kids totally cannot relate. By the way, my kids, especially Ethan, my youngest, was totally excited to watch this because he's been playing The Escapist, a PC video game. And it's all about, escaping prison, and Alcatraz is one of the downloadable contents. And so he was like, oh, I've been watching YouTube videos and they talk about Escape from Alcatraz. And I went, ooh, you're going to watch that this week for Film Sack? And I was like, I've never had the kids be so excited.
That's crazy. A game. That's cool,
that
though.
A game gives new meaning to the term grinding. I mean, is there like hours upon hours of scraping at the the ventilation shaft of your wall?
There is. That's what you do. You craft your shivs and stuff.
I'm farming dirt to take out to the dump on the...
You kind of are, and I've seen this game. It's like this 2D top-down sprite-based thing. It's not even like super realistic or anything. It's kind of like Minecraft in prison, really.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Right. And it goes by days. Days are like, the time is really clicking by quickly, but you've got time that you can spend in the yard, and you can increase your strength, and you got to do that so that you can go back into other inmates' cells and take stuff and make deals and craft.
Can you get drugs brought in by the guards and stuff? Like
I don't know if I haven't gotten that far, but I do know that there's items that are red. That means that you don't want to get caught with those because they search your rooms, just like in Escape from Alcatraz. You'll be sitting there, you'll go to roll call in the morning, and then they'll call your name and they'll go search your room. And if you've got any contraband in there, you're busted.
If you're alpha dog at the prison, can you make sweet love to the new guy? Like
you can try, but it'll probably punch you right in the belly.
Okay.
Stick soap in your mouth.
All right. Gosh, that fight, dude. La, 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 la. That was gross.
Oh, I'll tell you, the other movie that came up for me a lot while watching this was Naked Gun 33 and a third. Because
I don't remember that movie, but go
because
ahead.
Fred Ward was in it, because they go to prison, they do all the tricks that are in this movie about, you know, getting rid of the dirt and so on.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, right.
I don't remember that movie at all. Plot line, no. I remember Leslie. The first one. 33rd and a third or whatever. That was the third one?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's a dumb question now that I've asked it, but I can't remember. Did that still have O.J. Simpson in it, or was he done by that?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm pretty sure he was in it.
All right.
He was in prison.
Yeah. Nordberg? He was in the third one.
They just, I think that was right before things got bad for him. Yeah. What were you going to say?
It's the one with Anna Nicole Smith.
Oh. Okay. No. That is newish.
This movie's making me sad.
Yeah, a little bit.
Escape from Alcatraz is kind of a sad movie. Like, you don't really get a good reason other than liberty and freedom that they're trying to get out. Like, yes, prison sucks. But it doesn't suck in an aggressive, masculine way. It
life,
just sucks.
Life endangering.
Yeah. Right. Like, yeah, I mean, well, I realize. Plus, go ahead.
You kind of want Clint Eastwood to be free, but I don't know if you really want Fred Ward to be free.
Yeah.
He seems like unleashing him back into the world is maybe a bad idea.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know what I mean?
Like, I realize that they try to rape him, they try to chiv him and so forth. Like, there's a lot of aggression in this movie. But there's also, like, scenes like, we're taking all your painting supplies away. And I'm just, like, so sad.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. This movie has no women. There's a trope.
Oh, yeah, no women. Hold on.
That's 60s. But that's a male prison movie. How can you fault them for that?
Well,
I don't know. I'm just saying, because it has no women, I'm stuck in all of these masculine frames of mind.
Yeah.
And to see things like a guy taking another guy's painting supplies away.
it made me sad.
It's so sad. I don't know.
I like that
or
guy.
Charlie Butts, too.
Yeah, Charlie Butts got screwed. Yeah.
And just how sad he is standing in his cell, like right at the front of his cell when the guard is coming by.
I didn't make it.
I'm just going to stand here and look sad.
Yeah, that was kind of pathetic.
Oh, and one of the ways they make all this work is Clint Eastwood takes up the saxophone.
Yeah.
And so there's some great.
You mean the accordion.
Accordion, yeah.
Wait, sorry, the other guy's the saxophone.
Yeah.
And so there's some great psychology there. Like, oh, you want to inspect one? Inspect mine. And then any guard in the world wouldn't.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Okay. But the whole thing about being like, there's this art. This attempt at putting art into the film as this counterbalance to their situation never works. I'm sorry, but these guys, painters, sculptors, musicians, no, I'm sorry. You took it too far, and it just left me sad. The band didn't sound good.
Well, let me tell you this. Here's how the artist would have not only survived the day, but not have to cut his hands off or any of this business. He just needed to draw paint the warden and not make him all caricaturized and with his big eyes and stupid grin on his face.
Mm-hmm.
Make him serious like the rest of your paintings. Done. He would have seen it and said, oh, this is lovely. Thank you very much.
I'm very, very fond of this.
I'll put this right next to my scale model of the penitentiary over here.
Right after I feed my fish. Yes.
Hey, let me throw a trope out.
Oh, I got one of these for you. There you go.
Are there any movies featuring prison that don't feature at least one power-hungry guard?
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Corrupt, power-hungry guard. I mean, Orange is the New Black has one. Yeah. Shawshank has it. This has it. Anything that depicts prison life.
Yeah, Green Mile.
And that's how you create sympathy for the character in prison, because you're like, okay, he deserves to be in prison, but he still deserves to be treated like a human being.
Right. Yeah. And that is, I think that is exactly how they make it, like, oh, I do want him to get out because he's, you know, maybe he's a bad guy, but he's not as bad as these other guys who are worse.
Yeah, it's worse. They're hiding behind the lawn doing terrible things. Did Green Mile have a? I can't remember.
Oh my gosh!
Oh, absolutely.
Percy was the worst.
Yeah. Right. Okay. It's been a long time.
Every adaptation of The Count of Monte Cristo has stuck with that.
Yeah. Oh wow! Well, you're going way back.
I'm just thinking through Death Race. You know.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean.
No, I think it's a permanent trope. It's never. It's immovable.
It would be a bummer to be a prison guard because, you know, they're never depicted well.
No, they're either depicted as terrible, horrible, sadistic human beings or giant fat guys who couldn't run if they had to.
Tom Hanks was kind of portrayed kind of well in his movie.
He was sort of in charge.
The Green Mile had mostly nice guys.
Yeah, but
mostly,
he was in charge, right? Wasn't he in charge? He was like captain of the whatever.
Mm-hmm. Of the mile.
Yeah, of the captain of the mile. Mm-hmm. Well said. All right, we're going to take a very fast break. We'll be right back. This episode brought to you by Casper.com, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost, revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to you, the consumer. They make mattresses that are obsessively engineered over at a very fair price. There's two technologies at play here, latex and memory foam. I can tell you from firsthand experience, because I have one, that feels really good. You can easily buy it online with a 100-day painless return promise. If you have you have 100 days to evaluate that thing. So did I. Guess what? I kept it. But if you decide not to, no problem. You can send it back. That's way better than hunting down a showroom and trying that out and then hoping you bought the right one. Buy it. Try it. If you don't like it, 100 days later, send it back. $500 for a twin, $950 for a king size. Compare that to industry averages. Dirt cheap. How about an additional $50 off for our audience members by going to casper.com/filmsack and enter the code filmsack. That's casper.com/filmsack and enter that promo code filmsack. And thanks, Casper. All right, where were we? I like the warden, though. I like evil wardens. I'm a big fan of that. So bring on the evil wardens. I was watching, what were we watching? Oh, Daredevil. And it's got the warden from Shawshank in it. Can't think of his name. That guy.
As the owl.
Yeah. Jeez.
Well, yeah, he's right.
Could have been the owl.
I won't say any more than that. It is the character from Marvel who becomes the owl.
Yeah, I have a hard time thinking of a single performance that has turned me against an actor ever doing anything else like that one.
Yeah, no, he established...
Oh, from his character in Shawshank?
Can you even imagine sitting down and having a lovely lunch with this man? Like, he seems... Yeah. He's so painted himself as evil.
His name
you
is
totally
Bob Gunther.
You want my french fries, don't you? You totally want my french fries.
Yeah, somehow you're going to get me to buy lunch, aren't you, you bastard? No, we've talked about him before. He was in Broken Arrow and some other stuff we've seen. He's just such... This is his cast now. Now, okay, I'll give you a little piece of something where you could change around a little bit. He was really good in 24 and played a very good man in like a late season, like five.
I couldn't accept that.
It was
I couldn't either. Kind of thing.
I couldn't either. It took me about 8 episodes, and I still wasn't sure until the very end, because you just think he's hiding something the whole time, and he turned out to be just a good guy. Secretary of something, or chief of staff, or whatever he was.
It's got to be interesting to be that person. Like, I really nailed it. I pissed off the entire world. They hate my guts by performing that so well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that isn't going to pay the bills the rest of your life.
Yeah, he's a terrible man. If there was a Star Trek series that was more active during his heyday, he would have been in them, and he would have been a terrible man in those.
Well, of course. Yeah.
He never played a bad guy in a Star Trek?
Yes, he did, in The Wounded.
What?
The Next Generation episode, The Wounded, he's Benjamin Maxwell. It's awesome because he is actually just the same guy as he was in Shawshank Redemption, only he's a Star Trek captain.
Wow. You're right. There he is. Are you sure that's... Wait.
Yeah.
That's him. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, then may all my stereotypes come true. That's amazing. Here's another interesting stat on this movie. Fresh water had to be hauled in by boat, which seems crazy because they have all this water, but they needed fresh water to create the rain.
How do you carry water on a boat? That doesn't make any sense.
They had to bring it over there. And
deep rock bottles.
They said the salt water was going to damage all the cameras and stuff, so they had to, they had to do
that's
that.
Funny, though. How do you carry water on a boat?
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, they've been doing it for hundreds of years, man.
Yeah, I know. Pretty sure that's been a thing. It suffers from something. Let's see. Do I have a theme for this? Yeah, I'll give it this. How about this? How about this?
Bleep you!
It suffers from great white man will save us all syndrome. Yeah. And I don't like that, especially in new movies, because I think we should know better. But I don't like it in old movies either. And it's not so much that we don't have good, interesting, strong characters that aren't white in this movie. It's just that they seem helpless without Clint Eastwood. Like, he had to come in and give them hope and break through these barriers and talk to the leader of the black gang there in the yard and get the book guy to trust him. And, you know, it took him, this great white savior of everyone in this movie. I hate that. It's a trope that drives me.
Well, he had super high IQ, right?
Yeah. Yeah, basically. And they all just seem so nervous and lost without
him. Why
are
you saying it like that?
Yeah,
he's super smart. He's wicked smart.
I don't know what he's doing. What are you doing?
I don't know. He was just it was like, it was so over the top. Like, it was like the warden's got his hand over the IQ sheet, and I'm like, geez, could you bang us over the head a little more and see how smart he is?
Well,
he's a freaking genius.
1960, well, baby.
He didn't strike me as that
smart. Did y'all catch the Danny Glover?
No, yes. What?
Yes.
No, not until I went back and read that he was in there. I was like, oh, really? Missed
right,
that.
Right, right. He's like, you can't really see him. You just hear his voice.
I'm going to look it up.
I'm too old for this shit.
No, he's young.
I'm too young for this.
Oh no, he's in it. You see him?
An extra inmate.
Here he is. I found him. You want to see him? Here, I'll share you this here photo here.
That's him on the toilet in Lethal Weapon.
No, not that. Hold on, for real. This is a GIF. I don't know why it's a GIF. It's not animated. We don't do GIFs anymore unless they're animated in this world. But anyway, there he is. He's behind bars. He was talking to him.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, it's totally him, dude.
Yep.
Weird.
So I got another trope.
He was, I'm too young for this shit, he said.
Popeye, like Popeye, right? Like Popeye.
Oh, wow. It's 2 weeks in a row for Fingor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Two weeks in a row. And I actually got me thinking, what's my favorite and most hated Fingor movie? And I came up with it. I actually put my mind to it and figured it out. Okay. The answer is The Prestige, because there's a character who accidentally gets two of his fingers shot off, and he's got his twin brother pretending to be the same person. So they have to get those fingers cut off, and it's, oh.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. I'm trying to remember. Yeah. You just made me remind me. Oh, I'm thinking of RoboCop when he had his hands blown off. That's not quite the same.
That's pretty good.
Because they were picking away at everything on him.
Right. He's got his hands on the end on the his hand on the end of a shotgun in that movie. I hate that.
Ugh, that's not good. Well, they're tender little, listen, our hands, intricate, tender pieces of our bodies.
That's right.
Tender little vina sausages. That's what they are.
You
don't want
them. You need to take care of those things, man.
Did you think it was weird, speaking of that scene, where when Clint Eastwood, he's getting the wooden box. He's doing the right thing, right? Because he wants to get the fingers, put them in a box so maybe they can reattach them. And he takes a box of nails and just throws them on the floor instead of just dumping them on the table next to him.
Right. So I care and I'm pissed off and I want all you people to hurt yourself too.
Right.
That's right. Exactly.
Right. I thought he was going to get chucked in D block again for all that behavior. Yeah. But
oh man, getting the D was not good in prison. No. You do not want to get the D in the D block.
No. Getting hosed down by that one guy, corrupt guy.
D bags and D block.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you think you guys think you could handle 30 days of darkness and then occasional abrupt shower?
I would do what what Tim Robbins did and just recite old baseball games to myself.
I think
was that Kevin Bacon in Murder in the First?
Oh, I don't remember.
Gosh, I don't remember which is which now in that particular scene, but I kind of remember Tim Robbins just shuddering and shaking for 30 days or something.
I would do, okay, movies do this to us again. Like, okay, for example, movies never show somebody going into the hole or into isolation or in this case D block. That's never portrayed by just them doing something wrong. It's always a guard overstepping his authority. It's always somebody in charge with authority unjustly shoving somebody in there in movies. Mm-hmm. My guess is in actual use, those things are, I mean, I'm
rare.
Listen, I've never been to prison, but I can tell you that seems wrong to me. Like, it's so rare, and when it does happen, there's some justification, some checks and balances, right?
If you read some of these websites that are tracking the horrific injustices in our prison system, you actually get the feeling that it's the other way around. The Orange is the New Black, only throwing the lead in the hole once is actually the extreme. Like, it's the people are getting
put into
isolation way more than they should for absolutely flimsy reasons.
And is it really for 30 days or is it for like,
it could be a month. You just bring you food and water and you can keep anybody.
Well,
in there.
We know it had to be, well, we established a timeline of what was it? Two, let's see, you had how many haircuts? One haircut a month, a shower.
Shave every day though.
A shave every day, and then
shower twice a week.
Yeah. Can I trade my two shaves a week or my two showers a week for a shave every day? Can I change those around?
Right. Good reverse Lord. Exactly.
Anyway.
He only got one shower, so I'm guessing that the timeline was around less than a week.
That is something they never get right. When they throw a guy in the hole, they never pull him out with a big beard.
Yeah, he came out. Yeah. Yeah, that bugged me. I mean, they do sometimes, but it's usually when there's more of a focus on the hole. I'd like to take that back.
Focus on the hole.
Can I retract that?
Nope, too late.
This movie had a trope and then a chick in the bucket. So here's your trope. I don't like animals. Movies that are supposed to be realistic where animals have superpowers, basically.
Oh my God, that drove me freaking crazy.
The message
you cannot train a mouse to take your messages to a specific place.
Come on, you've never heard of trained mouse couriers? What?
No.
Okay, me neither. That was dumb. I hated that. And then the chick in the bucket, and I don't have a good theme for this, so I'll just do this one. It's the mouse. We never, there's no resolution. The guy had this heart attack after being upset.
He put him in his pocket. Clint Eastwood at the end. He put him in his pocket, you know, and he swam with him.
Right.
He
drowned the mouse.
I'm going to get you to the shore, and then I'm going to drown you in my pocket.
Hold on. I missed the scene where he put it in his pocket. Did he?
Yeah.
Oh. Because we had the mouse who was a little mouse, and he stuck him in. You're going to get out of here too, buddy. And he stuck him in his pocket, and then they started climbing, and then the giant rat was at the top, and of course that stole on Cleveland.
I blanked that out. I don't remember that. I guess he did. So it drowned then. That's the
well, that's
truth. That's the hard
either
truth.
That or he just said, you know, here you go. I'll sit you down on the shore here. That's as much out as you're going to get. Let's go.
Yep. Have fun with your single piece of spaghetti.
It's been fun. Gotta run.
Yeah. See you, buddy.
A prison movie is going to kind of necessarily have chicks in buckets. That's just sort of what happens with a prison movie.
Sure.
It has to introduce a bunch of people who are stuck and then just leave them stuck.
Before we get to clips, I have this to ask. Why was it so dark all the time? And I know, look, I know you got to work yourself through 500 miles of shit and whatever, as what's his name said, to get through to the other side clean. I get that. But there's so much darkness in there. And the way this was filmed, I couldn't see anything. And I had my brightness cranked. I don't know if it's just transfer from old film to, you know, now we got some digital version of it. I don't know, but it looked
like even when
terrible.
They were out in the yard and stuff, did it feel dark?
No, that was fine. It was just the
that was like I can't see.
It was just when he was in the wall, like getting out, and then traveling through the lattice work, and the rat falling down and almost hitting one of them in the face, and all that
felt,
stuff.
That felt artificially darkened.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Like they shot it and were like, oh, this doesn't at all look
it's too light
like what we want, so we're just gonna crank it down.
Yeah, I can't hardly pay attention when that happens in a movie, and it's just like, what's happening? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. It's freaking pitch black in that place. And I know you wanted to you want to show that, but it's movies. We can deal with a little fake lighting. It's fine. Lots of movies do well with that. By the way, speaking of which, I just want to give a shout out to The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, and here's why. That game has a day-night cycle that's actually pretty impressive, but what makes it most impressive to me is the night cycle features moonlight in the most realistic way I've ever seen it portrayed. Because moonlight, if it's really out and clear and big, can really light up a place and does it in a way that is very unique to moonlight. It does not look like sun at all. And creates kind of like a blue, like almost skim milk kind of layer on everything. I think of skim milk as
not,
like a...
Not 2%. Not the whole.
It's not translucent enough, but it's really impressive. And I wish some movies do this, but oh, you know what does it? Fury Road does it at night. Did a really good job with that.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Like that feeling of like weird ethereal light. It's like that. Mm-hmm. I wish more movies would do that.
The blue glow kind
of
thing?
Yeah, kind of. It's not so much blue as it's subtle. It just feels like moonlight, like big, bright moonlight. And I loved that. I thought that was great.
You like big, bright moons, do you?
I do. Give me one. Show me yours. Show me your moon. let's do get to some clips. We have some. And there are numerous, not that many, but, a few here. Here is the first word spoken in the movie. There's a huge chunk of time with no talking. Well, they're taking him to prison there. And then finally someone says this.
Welcome to Alcatraz.
Nice touch,
that was
dude.
And I start out already upset with their sound design.
Yeah, it's pretty
like
bad.
From that moment, every time they insert a sound unnecessarily, I'm frustrated.
Yeah, I don't
get
like it.
The sheet metal out. Time to make some thunder noise.
Whack it hard. All right, yeah.
Thunder noise. Also, there's rules to how we do things here.
If you disobey the rules of society, they send you to prison. If you disobey the rules of the prison, they send you to us.
Yeah, except you have a nice witch shot.
And what happens?
And then,
if you disobey, the rules of us, we send you to the hole.
And then
if you disobey the rules of the hole, we... I don't know. We send you
to Disneyland.
And then you escape. Then you escape and get out of here. Good luck to you. Stink. What?
Stink, stank, stunk.
Oh, I put stink to
stink
not
in the basket.
I don't know what I wrote here.
You put the stink in the basket? What you
said? Yeah, I don't know what he said. Here it is.
I was specially chosen to make sure that the stink from the basket does not escape.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Yeah. Stink from the basket. I got all the rotten eggs in the basket. I got to make sure the stink doesn't escape. I don't care about the eggs.
Right.
All right.
Put a little Febreze on that. The eggs are fine.
There you go. Here's a fun one.
Why don't you show her what you can do?
Can you guys tell me why? Okay, that's kind of loud because there's a shower going.
Yeah, the pressure in that, the water pressure in that place,
it
man.
Was like razors on your skin. It's terrible.
Yeah.
But listen to what he says. He says it in such a goofy way, and I don't know if it's overdubbed or what, but here it is again.
Why don't you show her what you can do?
Why don't you show her what you can do? That's a weird Clint thing to say.
It's kind of anachronistic, right? It's probably unlikely that they had good showers
right
in Alcatraz, which didn't have water.
Well, we've seen Michael Biehn pop up from under them and get blown away by Ed Harris and his men. I love The Rock. When are we doing that movie?
Yeah, we need to do that movie.
Oh, I love that movie so
much. I haven't seen it since the theater.
It's on our all-time watch list. If it ever comes on streaming, we're watching it.
It's the only reason I have any... I ever give a benefit of the doubt to Michael Bay because I know he made that and I know what power that movie has over me. And so everything else he makes, I'm like, oh, I'll give it a chance. And I'm usually disappointed.
I just want to stop you. Like Michael Bay has been on this downward slide. Everybody is really jumping up and down on his head about the ever decreasing quality of the Transformers movies. But like we saw when we watched the Island,
the guy
knows how to shoot a film.
Yeah. He also knows how to steal some scenes from that movie and use them later in Transformers. Yeah.
Sure.
But, no, I mean, he's fine. I agree. He has all the talent in the world. Bad Boys 2, especially. Amazing. I love those movies.
Armageddon, Pearl Harbor is beautiful to watch. Maybe not the greatest script in the world.
Right. Yeah, the script's pretty bad. But it's fun to watch. It's cool. And The Rock just stands as probably still my favorite of that. There's that certain fabric of action movie that was indicative of late 90s action and like Bruckheimer era stuff. And this is it. The Rock is it. That's the king of those, as far as I'm concerned. The rest of them can all bite my shiny.
And that's the thing. There's so many people involved that you love. There's Quentin Tarantino allegedly gave the screenplay a treatment and, Sean Connery at the top of his game and et cetera.
Yeah, he was great. Hey, you ever F the prom queen? He says. All right.
Who's your car key?
Here's your... Listen. I'm not doing this again. I did this the other day to excess. Here's your... I don't know what this is.
Can you read, boy?
Ooh. 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 That's some... That's
uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Maybe
well,
I don't want to use that phrase.
Here's my favorite thing no one says anymore. This one right here.
Where you going, Cracker?
Where you going, Cracker?
Yeah.
I say that all the
like
time.
Cracker. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to pause the video and explain it to my son.
I don't hear it anymore ever. Like,
no.
Maybe ironically, someone will just say, what you doing, Cracker, or something. I can't even remember the last time I heard that. So it's weird.
Where you going, Cracker?
All right, great. how do you pass the long nights?
I sleep lousy last night. When I sniff the glue, it helps pass the nights.
That guy.
That's Al Capone right there.
Yeah, it's Al Capone sniffing glue, raising a mouse to
Litmus.
Send messages.
What a great
Frank
name.
Ronzio playing Litmus.
Died, right?
Yeah,
yes.
Totally.
1989.
Yeah.
Oh, I meant in the movie.
No. I knew that.
Well, yeah.
Well, we never did see where they went.
Well, no, he died.
I know.
The rat appeared, so I'm assuming.
No, I know he died, but I assumed it meant I assume what you meant was his real life. Yeah, but the real life guy died, at age 80 something, right? He lived
pretty long. Didn't do a lot of movies or anything either. Like, was on Hill Street Blues, Beretta, Dropout Father, Deadly Force, Hard to Hold, Fierce City, and an episode of Knight Rider. And but it seems like he'd be, he's a great looking character actor, but just didn't get a lot of work apparently.
Yeah, interesting. I liked him. His heart attack was a little much, but it's fine.
Well, maybe that's why he didn't get a lot of extra work.
Right.
did this guy not sound like the Motel 6 guy to you? I'm gonna play it here. He's a guard.
Tom Baudet?
Yeah, sounds like Tom Baudet. Here he is.
You like D Block Wolf? You better. Because you're going to rot in there for a long time.
We'll leave the light on for you.
That's not bad. He sounds a little more like Bo Duke to me.
A little bit. Wait.
You like D-Block Wolf?
Yeah, a little bit. Or Coy and Vance, maybe. Maybe when they came on the scene. All right, here's Charlie something.
What's your name, kid?
Charlie Butts.
Charlie's Butt?
Ah, Charlie's Butt.
Charlie's Butt. That's not what I said.
All right. This is what everybody says when Ibbot walks in the room. They hear that there's a Brian Ibbot in the room. They hear his name, and they say this every time.
You got a funny freaking name, kid.
There you go.
Okay.
Well, it is a little funny. Ibbot, it's a rare name. It's great.
Sound funny? How's it funny?
Go ahead. Tell me, Scott. How's it funny?
Hollywood gun sounds. Here's a couple. I hate those sounds.
That was the exact same effect.
Yeah, three times in a row.
Yep. Yeah.
Pretty sure they used it in other parts of the same movie, too. It's terrible. I really like sound work today with guns. I think we've come a long way. It may not be always realistic, but it's varied and dynamic and doesn't sound like shit.
Right. Was the purpose of that just to show? Because, like, they made the prisoners walk by and see them shooting the holes there. Just say, look, we can peg you. Don't think we can't.
Well, and they had previously demonstrated it by shooting at a guy's feet when he was trying to kill Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, Wolf.
And like we got the skills to take you out. Nowadays, they would have just blown his head off, and he would have just his body would have collapsed in the middle of the yard.
Yeah, right. That wouldn't worked well. All right, I like this one. Here's one.
Some cowboy piece of shit.
There you go. I just like the sound of some cowboy piece of shit.
That's what are they talking? Do you think that was in there because of all the westerns that Clint Eastwood had done? Like, they kind of threw that line in there.
I wondered, because this is also the director of a lot of those westerns, and I thought, maybe
a little,
they're just
a little Easter eggy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, maybe that was Fred Ward, right? Who said that?
Yeah.
Because they were talking about what movie.
Some gangster movies.
Yeah.
Some cowboy piece of shit.
Good, bad, and ugly or some crap like that.
All right, here's one. I don't know what this is.
Well, I'm looking you in the face, and I don't see jack shit.
Well, that's your two swear words in the whole movie, by the way. There were no F-bombs. Mm. And mm-hmm. they rated it R probably for the fingers. I'm
Was this, in the butts. I thought it was PG for us now. I thought, has it been re-rated? Or?
No. Is it? No, it wouldn't have been PG, would it? No, that needs to not happen. Decline.
Wow.
According to IMDb, this is rated PG.
Yeah, you can change those ringtones. You don't have to take the stock Apple ones.
That's my computer one, and I rarely ever hear it ring, so it caught me off guard. All right, so wait.
PG. PG on IMDb.
It was rated PG, and it stayed PG in the United States.
Really?
The only country I'm seeing that changed it was the UK.
That finger bit was pretty hardcore. I mean, I don't, you know, not that.
Yeah, we're okay with violence in the U.S.
You know what, though? That finger was bad. That was not good effects. I didn't feel at all like there was anything going on there except a couple of wooden fingers and some spilled ketchup.
Yeah, plus watching Charlie Butts gagging over there was pretty funny. I made a vine of that. I couldn't resist. Guy cracked me up. All right, where was I? Where were we? Here we are. This one. There you go. That's on the rap.
That was
nice.
It's so unnecessary.
It's pretty good though.
That's really frustrating to me that this movie did that.
Yeah. I wish he. Okay. Only thing that would make it better is when it fell. This is what would happen.
Some cowboy.
Not that. Hold on. Here you go. This.
Help! Help! It's happening.
That would have been great.
That would have made it better. You're absolutely right.
It would have improved everything. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for this. Whoops! This. By gum, it's the film sack checklist that begins this way. Give hardened criminals a hatchet? Sure, why not? Check. Can't see anything for 75% of the movie in the dark? Check. And hey, it's fake Kramer? Check. Star Trek connections. Larry Hacken played Charlie Butts on Voyager. He played Gaunt Gary in the episode The Cloud, Jetrel and Twisted, 3 episodes. And on TNG, he played the colorful, checkered, clown-faced wind dancer in the episode Cost of Living in 1992.
Wind dancer.
Yeah, he's a wind dancer. Joe Noland, who played a guard, he played an antique store owner in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. So he modern day.
He didn't even leave San Francisco.
Nope.
Between this and that.
Stayed right there. And then finally, Jerry Fielding, Jerry Fielding did music for this, and he wrote TOS 2 scores, including The Trouble with Tribbles. Speaking of which, the soundtrack grade, I'm going to give this thing an ITO because that stands for Is There One? There, other than a few moments like that stupid thing, there weren't much. There weren't much.
Twere a little bit of background music, but not much.
That actually...
Sorry, Dunaway, you're killing me. What, Randy, what?
That actually is one of the reasons why I think everybody finds the movie so boring. It tries to build suspense by having a lot of silence, but they had Jerry Fielding here. He's a really good score music writer. I don't understand why they didn't have him make some music and put it in here.
Yeah, it would have been too bad because there wasn't much. It was a lot of quiet. Mm-hmm. And not that I don't mind that in some movies when it's done right, but...
Yeah, I don't even remember any music, so it's funny you bring that up.
Just a lot of, like... discordant sound and things, and that was it, which was a very 70s kind of thing to do anyway. We've seen that before in other movies.
I mean, we're talking about the guy who wrote the music for Hogan's Heroes.
Oh,
like he wrote the music for Outlaw Josie Wales. Why does this movie have no music?
Well, help me with the Hogan's Heroes theme. All that's coming to my head is
that is the A-team. I'm talking about the TV show.
Yeah, the Hogan's Heroes. How's it go? Hogan's Heroes.
It's a horn, right? Because they got a trumpet. Is that what I'm remembering?
Here it
correctly?
Is. I found it. I'll play it. Here you go. Dun, dun, dun. I remember this. Oh, I used to love Hogan's Heroes.
In 1983.
Stop it. Oh, my God.
That may be why I did that. Okay, they're all running around on fake snow. Okay, here comes Clink. Okay, get the music going. Oh. There you go.
Alcatraz starts with a little bit of that snare drum, that little military drum thing, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's basically Hogan's Heroes, now that you think about it. Just a very
interesting
dark.
Interesting how you use the same type of music for your war thing as you do your prison thing.
Yeah, right? Weird, right? That happens a lot, I think. Oh, you know what? I just changed my mind on my favorite prison movie, because Shawshank's right up there. But you know what my favorite might be?
What's that?
Chicken Run.
Chicken Run.
I love Chicken Run. It's basically a prison movie. I mean, it's a war prison movie, kind of more. It's more like The Great Escape than it is like this, but I love that movie. I really do.
That's an interesting answer. You kind of have to get away from Shawshank Redemption so you can actually talk about other movies.
Yeah, that's true. That's that movie also used a ton of tropes stolen from the prison movie genre and then put them in it and made fun of them, which maybe makes why I like it so much. I don't know, but obviously they're two totally different things. I wouldn't put them on the same table, but... I love that.
This reminds me as well of a prison movie I've forgotten about with Val Kilmer, Felon.
Oh,
did you guys see that?
Right. Ages ago. Right. That wasn't good, I don't think. Was it?
I thought it was pretty intense.
Oh, no. This was good. Never mind. Sorry. Yeah, this was a 2007 thing.
Right. This is where a guy is defending himself at home and makes the mistake of going into his yard with someone who is trying to invade his home and killing him in the yard. And then goes to jail, meets Val Kilmer, and it goes. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, Stephen Dorff and Dorff is kind of hit and miss for me, but I think he was really good in this. And if you want to see the worst photoshopped Val Kilmer face in the history of cinema,
talking about that goatee.
Look at that cover of that movie cover. It's bad. Here, I'll share it with you, my friends. There you go. That's just bad Val Kilmer Photoshop. It just looks real bad.
Real bad.
Oh, it's also got what's his name from Lost in it back there.
Oh, yeah.
Michael.
Yep. That's the guy.
Walt!
Freaking, jeez. Michael storyline.
It looks like Jeff Bridges there, not Val Kilmer.
Yeah. It does. It's bad. It's bad Photoshop, though. Just look how weird it looks. It doesn't look right.
I got an interesting thought, which is how much prison makes a movie a prison movie? Like, Guardians of the Galaxy has a pretty long prison scene, but I'd never call it a prison movie, right?
Nah. Whereas 5% prison.
Okay, then how about I Love You, Philip Morris? It's more than half prison, but I don't know that I call it a prison movie.
Would you call it a movie? Silence of the Lambs a prison movie?
No. Yeah, I think so.
No,
really, I would.
I'd call it an isolation tank movie. It's different. Because
there was a guy in the prison.
He was isolated from everybody, though, not really even in the same block.
And let's just stop and remind everybody to watch I Love You, Philip Morris. That's one of the most underrated films of the last two decades.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
It's the Jim Carrey Born Identity.
Aaron Eckhart?
Yeah.
Eckhart's in it?
Yeah, you should see it.
No, not Eckhart. It's not Eckhart. No. It's Born Identity. It's Jason Bourne is in that, right? Hold on.
As the lady?
Thank you for smoking is the one with...
Yeah, that's Aaron Eckhart. This is the one with...
Ewan McGregor.
Oh, Ewan McGregor,
Oh, right. Okay, that's his name.
That's it. Why did I think...
Why did I think it was Matt Damon?
McGregor.
I had Matt Damon in my brain. That's weird. Oh, all right, well...
It's Ewan McGregor.
Let's get to your Twitter post. Hey, Twitter post, everybody. This is where you guys sum up this movie in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Escape from Alcatraz. The Rock has never been so boring. It was like watching the paint dry on a cricket match during a local issue political speech about.
I like that right before the snore, it was a meow, and then you were out. That was really funny. Dunaway.
Escape from Alcatraz. Like getting a lumpy officer report from Mr. Zimmerman. You don't want to open that bag.
With this finally, Brian Ebbett with his.
Escape from Alcatraz. Everyone can associate with the hours of solitude and the feelings of helplessness against a power-mad Machiavellian prison warden, but basement podcasters like me can really connect with the pasty white papier-mâché prison dummies.
That was good.
Nicely done. Ooh, just handed to me. Right here. A little Foley work for you.
He has paper.
Alternate titles. First one, quote, nothing causes more prison heart attacks than mushing flowers, or you could have just drawn instead, finger boy. All right.
The flower at the end was the most meaningless thing I've ever seen.
It's terrible. Right. It's terrible. Where do you find another one of those is the question.
I realize I was almost asleep by that point. Yeah, but
it is bad.
That just...
It was bad. Emails. Yeah. We got one from Ole Morten is his name. He's a professional drummer from Norway, and he has this to say.
It's Ollie, probably. Then, oh, right?
Ollie?
Ollie? Isn't that how they pronounce it? Ollie
You're Morten? Right. I'm calling him Ole Morten like a dumbass American for real.
That Let's is see. Too funny.
He must be right. Ollie Morten. Anyway, hiya, Team Duck Deluxe Away and Team Gibbet. On the one about Mission Impossible 2, Randy asked the following question. When did Metallica's percussion get good? I have a few things to say about that, he says.
Uh-oh.
First of all, the question is slightly inaccurate. It should read, since when did Metallica's percussion start sounding somewhat good? the answer to that
Ollie,
is...
Ollie, come on!
Well, he's from there even, or from that part of the world. Anyway, it says, the answer to that is Metallica the Black Album. But it has nothing to do with Lars Ulrich. The man was a tennis player, for crying out loud. He sucks, and will always suck as a drummer. The reason for his dramatic improvement on the Black Album is Pro Tools and digital editing. Those poor sound engineers spent weeks and weeks just trying to cut that shit together and make it sound somewhat coherent and tight. Just so you can edit your way out of some poor acting, you can edit your way out of some rusty grooves. So I'm sorry, Scott. Lars Ulrich is not an amazing drummer. He's just a sour old Danish Napster hater.
Wow.
Love John
old
Bonham,
Danish
though.
Napster hater.
I love old Morten,
dude.
I'm
going to open a Twitter account.
Ollie's my new favorite.
Yeah, that was. Thank you very much for that. And I agree that the Black Album is where I start liking that percussion sound. It's not really consistent.
Is it light?
Yeah. It's not like really consistent until Fuel, and I don't understand how. I don't get that. Yeah. It's like... If you listen to back to Van Halen albums, suddenly they find the bass in like 93 or something. Yeah. And I don't understand.
Who? What'd you say?
The bass.
There it is.
Oh. It's just finding. Yeah.
And the bass. All right.
I knew he had it around here somewhere.
I got a phone call too. This is about nail drivers because we brought this up.
God,
so here
I'm
you
so
go.
Tired
hey
of this.
Scott, Brian, Randy, and Brian. This is for Film Sack. I know you guys don't usually do like voicemails and stuff like that on the show for a lot of stuff, but for your Punisher 04 episode that just came out last week, I actually wanted to kind of give you guys a little bit of insight. Randy was talking about the nail driver comment, talking about his gun, you know, being nail drivers. A lot of times, like in the comic book and stuff like that, where they were referencing stuff like the nail driver, all that, blah, blah, blah. It was usually referencing because they were talking about him putting people in the ground, like putting the nail in the coffin.
Oh.
So they called his gun sometimes nail drivers.
All right. That makes sense to me now.
Right.
Gosh, was he on an elevator or an airplane? What do we think?
No,
I think it was a car.
He just got home. Like a lot of people listening to the podcast, got to his destination, was getting out, had one final thought, opened door, said, no, better stop that.
Yeah. You know what goes on in people's heads when that's happening? This is what happens.
Help, help, it's happening.
Because they don't want to hang up. They don't want to ruin the call. They just keep going.
A lot of people really clung onto that. And I guess I didn't state it very well. Of all the things to have your badass old dude say about a gun, that just struck me as, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. He could have called them, you know, flamethrowers, mountain movers. I don't know.
Saying is this is canon, right? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. What was that
from,
though? What was the reference? Oh, it was Punisher.
Punisher.
Okay. Punisher. Yeah. He said
Punisher.
That. Punisher. Punitive damager. All right, that's that. Thank you for your calls and your emails. You can send your calls to 801-471-0462, 801-471-0GOB.
And shut the door!
You can also email us, filmsack@gmail.com, and we will take attachments if you'd prefer to send an MP3 or something there. So that would be fine. Our next movie is Highlander 3. For real this time. Brian Nibbett. Yeah. Are you excited to not have to worry about when that's coming now or what?
You know what? There was always the thrill of the chase though, right? I'm actually going to be kind of bummed now that I can't keep asking if that's next week.
This is the new Jack City. Mario Van Peebles is in it. So he's in it.
And let's call it by its full name, Scott. Highlander 3, The Final Dimension. Uh-huh. Apparently, we'd never get to see Highlander 3 ever again.
Nope.
And you just get one shot.
Is there a cameo? We don't know about
Lambert.
No. Lambert's all up in it.
The Connery. Other right. That's right. It's the TV show guys.
Well, that's a different one. I think that's another movie they made.
Oh.
I'm talking about Connery. Sean Connery. Yeah.
I'm just gonna keep naming people, and at some point I will name the right person.
Kind of like naming the right movie we're doing next week.
Well, wait. So the thing I'm looking at says Highlander 3 is called The Sorcerer.
Highlander.
Huh?
Oh, but then when you click on it, it says Highlander, the Final Dimension.
Oh, wait, there were two Highlander 3s.
You're right. Yeah. Why does it do that? That's weird. Oh, no, no, no.
No, same movie. Just it was originally called The Sorcerer. Working title, I guess, was.
Oh, okay.
The Sorcerer. Oh, I couldn't see it for the 5% on Rotten Tomatoes. Okay, there
it is. Highlander 3, right. Final Dimension. There it is. Yeah, and this one does not have. So this is Christopher Lambert.
Lambert.
Mario Van Peebles and Deborah Unger, whoever that is.
Car Unger. Deborah Unger. You know, you'll know her.
Will I know her? Oh, yeah. I do know her. There she is. Yeah, and pretty. She's been in other movies we've done, like The Game. Did we do The Game?
Yes, The Game. Yes.
All right. She's in The Game. By the way, Payback's streaming. Payback. I recommend Payback.
It just started on Netflix, isn't it?
We should watch Payback.
Didn't we have Payback on our list?
I don't know.
Okay,
I love Payback.
It's been on our list. Yeah, I just got to say, I got to peek at Payback before we commit to it. There's two edits. There's one that's watchable, and there's one that's horrible.
Yeah.
We'll take either one.
I've only seen the good one. So I don't know how bad that other cut is. The one I've seen is longer and great. And less dark.
I saw it in a dollar theater in a shopping mall in Connecticut when we arrived too early to go to my parents' house and we needed 2 hours to kill. So we went to the mall, said, you know what, let's just see a movie.
As God intended.
Kill a guy through a pillow. Oh, that's great. I love that movie. I'm a huge Payback fan. So if we ever slip that in, I would not complain. If you guys want to slip it in, I won't complain.
Slip it in. Let's see Paycheck and Payback back to back.
Yeah.
I think we should. I think maybe we should. No confusion.
I'm really not looking forward to Paycheck just because, I don't know, it's the one John Woo movie that really, truly leaves me flat.
Payback is streaming.
Mm-hmm. No. Paycheck. I like Payback. Payback's great.
Payback is streaming, by the way.
Oh, I thought Dunaway was saying I don't know what he's saying.
But you just said John Woo sucked. Last week?
No, I don't think he sucks. I think he's great. Oh. I'm saying his movie I like the least is Paycheck by far.
Even leaster than what we saw last week?
Yes. Leaster than that. Leaster than that, dude. Leaster than that. All right. So be here next week. Highlander 3. After that, we have 2 weeks of Japanese related live sacks of weird TV shows. And we'll tell you what those are next week after Highlander 3.
At least one of the weeks will be Japanese related. Depends on if we can find a good second one. Although we will take your recommendations for things that are streaming that have a strong Japanese.
Right, and these are things that are like we do live sex. So don't.
Oh no, wait, we did figure out what the site. Never mind. Okay, we did figure out.
Never mind. Shut up, everyone. Keep your emails to yourselves.
Yeah.
Forget what Brian said. It's all good now. We're all fine here. How are you? All right. okay, I like all this. Are we done?
Where you going, Cracker?
Nowhere. I'm going to tell them how to get a hold of us. Site is filmsack.com. Our voicemail line, again, is 801-471-0462. Email us, filmsack@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, @filmsack. Leave us a review on iTunes or wherever podcasts come from. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Okay.
We'll see you next time.
These are Vienna sausages.
Vienna.
Boy.
Show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.